Judiciary Committee back to order. And we have present for the record Representative Guerra, Representative Holm, Ogg, and Gruenberg. And we have the bill sponsored before us, Representative Bruce Wyrock, House Bill 25, otherwise known as the Five Wishes Bill. Representative Wyrock.
I had one. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This bill had passed the legislature without the House, last year without opposition. And it came back this year to be worked with, and with the assistance of members of the Health and Social Services Committee, had made quite a bit of changes to this bill and brought in the Anatomical Gift Act as well, and made changes to that statute and how a person would deal with the donation of body parts and decisions related to that. But essentially, my interest in this bill is based on a very personal issue. My father passing away recently, and while he had a power of attorney and health care directives, he didn't tell my mom where they were. And so he consequently lingered in a very poor state for more than a year. And maybe we all know people who did not wish to end their lives the way they ultimately ended up because they did not give clear directives on how they wanted end-of-life decisions made, how they wanted other people to treat them, how they wanted to deal with these major issues that are related to death and dying, which is a part of life that we all deal with. And Five Wishes also grew out of a national movement to deal with these end-of-life decisions that we all must face as a society. And I've been very moved by people that have worked and testified on this bill from around the state and locally because of their concerns that death and decisions related to death be handled with dignity, with clarity, and be handled comprehensively and efficiently by all of us for those we love. So this bill incorporates in one place in the Alaska law measures having to do with advanced health care directives, the organ donation program, living will program, do not resuscitate orders, and expanded durable power of attorney forms. And you'll see that through the course of the bill, how this is all brought together under one title, how the language attempts to lay out clearly for people how they deal with a durable power of attorney and makes policy decisions that these are to be placed in one place and gives the public who has to experience these kind of things for a loved one what they will do. What will happen upon death to their body parts, what their gifts are for, dealing with mental health treatment, your primary physician. This is an extensive, comprehensive approach to dealing with these matters, and it also makes some changes to the Anatomical Gift Act, and these are all based on an extreme amount of testimony by the public and also by staff and members of the Health and Social Services Committee. So there are some amendments that are going to be before the committee today, but Madam Chair, I do know there are some folks that took some time out to testify on this, and I would like to respond to questions from anyone on the committee. I don't want to, I know how this works in the committee, sometimes you run out of time. I'm here, they're not. If I can come back after they testify, if that's all right. I don't want to impinge on your, whatever you want to do.
Thank you, Representative Wyrock, and I appreciate that. And
I didn't identify myself for the record. I'm Bruce Wyrock, District 4. Thank you.
We were wondering.
We'd seen you hang around, but you've been here more than 4 hours.
So we'll...
Are you a lobbyist?
Are you? So we're going to ask you to stand by, if that's okay, and move through the witnesses. Thank you very much. I'd appreciate a motion, Representative Anderson.
Yeah, I move that the committee adopt CS for House Bill 25,
Hess, and the version is 23-LS0137/I.
Thank you. So, any objection to that motion? So we have CS for House Bill number 25, Hess, /I, before us for discussion and testimony purposes. We are under public testimony, and first I'm going to go to Paul Malley. Could be Molly. I apologize if I didn't get that right, Paul, who is the Executive Director for Aging with Dignity. And Paul, are you on the line?
I am, yes.
If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Malley, and I'm President of Aging with Dignity, a national nonprofit organization in Florida. So it's evening here, but I wish you a good afternoon there in Alaska. I am grateful to Representative Wyron for sponsoring this legislation and for all the work that has gone into this over the past 2 years. And I'm happy to share with you some of our experiences here at Aging with Dignity. We're the organization that created and distributes the Five Wishes Advanced Directive that's become somewhat of a national model for effective advanced care planning. The document itself, the Five Wishes Advanced Directive, is used now by more than 2 million Americans. And it's being distributed by about 5,000 organizations. Those organizations include hospitals and hospices, places of worship, companies that are giving it out to their employees. In fact, the U.S. Departments of State and Justice, the Food and Drug Administration, other large employers are giving this document out to employees. Governor Bush in the state of Florida has given out copies to all Florida employees and on all the different state agencies. I want to start by giving you some background on our organization, Aging with Dignity. It was founded by a man named Jim Toohey. He was Secretary of Florida's Department of Health in the mid-1990s, and just recently, last year, was appointed by President Bush to direct the White House Office on Faith-Based and Community Initiatives. So it was after that appointment that I was asked to succeed him as director of the organization. Prior to his experiences in the Department of Health here in Florida, he was the attorney to Mother Teresa of Calcutta. He did all of her legal counsel for the work that she did here in the United States. He also volunteered in her homes for the dying in India and in Mexico. And he saw there how important it is to care for people, especially when they're near the end of life, with utmost dignity, not only in the medical care that they receive, but how important it is just to have someone by their side, holding their hand, treating them like a person, praying for them if that's what they wanted, that sort of thing. And he contrasted that with what he saw often here in America, where dying can sometimes be miserable when people are getting care that they might not want to receive, when they don't want to talk about it in advance, sometimes because the forms that we provide are hard to understand. So that's why he founded Aging with Dignity and wrote Five Wishes. When he wrote this document, he had three goals in mind. The first was to make it easy to use and understand. We wanted to take out as much legal and medical jargon as we could and put it in regular, everyday language so that people could sit down in their living rooms and fill this out with their families. That was the first thing. The second goal was to include more than just the medical issues, because national research shows when you ask people what's important to them regarding care at the end of life, they say things like, I want to be at home if that's possible. I want to have my family with me. I don't want to be in pain. These types of personal care preferences. But in the past, when we ask people about end-of-life care through advanced directives, the only question we've asked commonly is, would you want to be on life support treatment? And it's no wonder that people don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. They just don't want to talk about it. So we wanted to include those personal, emotional, and spiritual issues that people say are so important to them. And the third is that we wanted to facilitate communication. As Representative Wyrock had said, his father had filled out an advance directive but didn't tell anyone about it. And that happens so often. It winds up in a safe deposit box and nobody knows about it. So we really want to encourage that communication, which is possible when you're working with a document that's written in layman's terms in regular, everyday language. When we introduced this form, we had the support of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which gave us guidance and input from medical professionals around the country. We also had legal counsel from the American Bar Association's Commission on Legal Problems of the Elderly. What they did was look at the existing advanced care planning laws in all 50 states, And they found at the time that there were 33 states that allow residents to put their wishes in their own words. So in other words, they didn't have to use the state-written mandatory form for a durable power of attorney for health care or for their living will. They were able to put their wishes in their own words and say what's important to them. There are 15 states now, including Alaska, that require residents to put their wishes on a state-written form. There's a required state-written form for the durable power of attorney right now in Alaska. This legislation would change that, and the benefit is that your residents will be able to say in their own words and be able to express to their family and their doctor what's important to them if they get sick and can no longer speak for themselves. This is a trend, this change of allowing residents to put wishes in their own words, that's picking up speed across the country. In just a few years, two states have made the change, Hawaii, California, and actually West Virginia, two of those three. And there are also others that have similar legislation pending right now, including Alaska, as well as Texas, Indiana, Ohio, and Wisconsin. So you're not alone. The changes that you're talking about making are proving effective and helpful. And in closing, I just want to share one very brief story with you that I think, to some degree, really speaks to the heart of what your discussion, what you're discussing and what you're considering right now. Last month, I was in New England and had just given a presentation, and a woman, I could see her coming up to me from the back of the crowd, had a tear in her eye, and she said that it had been a year since her husband had passed away. And she said for the last 28 days of his life, he was in a coma, and he had filled out his five wishes document before. And they had his five wishes document sitting by his bedside. And she said, it was wonderful because all of our family, his sons, his daughters, his doctors, his nurses, could come in and pick up that document and know exactly what he wanted. She said, my family wanted so badly to be a good caregiver to him, but we didn't know what to do. But we looked in five wishes and found out that he wanted to have pictures of his grandkids nearby, that he wanted to have certain music played, that he wanted us to be there with him as much as we could. And we were able to do something because he expressed that. Then when the doctors told us that he was not likely to recover and we had to make a decision about life support treatment, this woman said that she went to her son, and her son said, absolutely not, we cannot do this, we cannot remove Dad from life support treatment because it will kill him. And she said, here's this document that your father filled out, and he showed him his five wishes. And the son looked at it and said, this is in Dad's handwriting, this is what he wanted. Not our decision to make, it was Dad's decision, and he made it. So this is what we need to do. So the family was able to make the decision, and they were at peace with it. That same day, as they were looking through his five wishes, one of the options in five wishes that you have to choose is that you want your family members to make peace with each other, if that's possible, before your death. It's not always possible, but it's something to think about and to talk about. Mm-hmm. Well, this man had put a big star next to that, and his two sons saw that. Were two sons who hadn't spoken in 5 years. And that day that their father died, they spoke for the first time, and for the year since, have been great friends. And that speaks to the human element of what's involved at the end of life, the conversations that need to happen that so often don't, that by passing this legislation, you're encouraging and promoting in the homes and the families in Alaska. So I thank you for that. And with that, I'll leave it open to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Malley. It looks like we do have Representative Guerra has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Malley. I just want to thank you. I mean, this is akin to a civil rights movement that you've been working on. As you know, 15 years ago, we weren't where we are today in the state of the law where we do allow people to die with dignity. So you've been part of an important movement, and I just want to thank you for all your work.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Malley. We appreciate your time today, and I don't see any other questions. We'll just continue to move through the testimony, but thank you for providing the framework from which this committee can work, and we appreciate all your hard work throughout the nation on this issue.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Next, I have Eddie Zakakis, I think, with the Disability Law Center. You can correct me, Eddie. If you just state your name and your affiliation for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony. Thank you for coming today.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Edie Zukowski. I'm an attorney for the Disability Law Center of Alaska. Alaska. And first of all, I'd like to thank you and Representative Wyrock and Linda Sylvester of Representative Wyrock's office for putting so much time into this and helping us work through the problems that we've got with it. The Disability Law Center is mandated by the federal government to protect and advocate for individuals with disabilities. Our obligations are to pursue administrative, legal, and any other appropriate remedies that are necessary to protect the rights of these individuals with disabilities and to protect the individuals from abuse and or neglect. I am the mental health attorney with a specific duty to work on behalf of individuals with mental illness. Now, I became involved with House Bill 25, which is sponsored by Representative Wyrock, as soon as I heard that the previous mental health treatment bill was being replaced. I needed to ensure that individuals with mental illness retained their hard-earned protections while enabling them to benefit from this new bill. To do this, I contacted many organizations. I worked closely with Richard Granary from the Alaska Mental Health Board. I worked with Ron Cowell, the long-term care ombudsman. I contacted and got feedback from the Alaska Consumer Web, that's a consumer-run organization, NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and the Alaska Mental Health Association, and others here and there, these primarily. Before submitting these amendments to Representative Wyrock's office, I reviewed them with Dr. Maria Wallington, who is a medical ethicist with Providence Hospital, and she has testified before the HEPS committee. Fortunately, we were able to incorporate almost all of the amendments before it passed out of HEPS, and rather than hold the bill up, we did reserve these following for the judiciary, which we figured was probably a better place for these issues to be addressed anyway. So with your permission, I would like to proceed with the proposed amendment. You should have from Mr. Sylvester and Representative Wyrock's office copies of this proposal. Are we on the same page here?
Yes, we are. Thank you, Edie. And I also want to note for the record that Mr. Bob Briggs, your fellow attorney, is also there from the Disability Law Center as well. So, Mr. Briggs, if there's a point that you want to chime in as well, we've noted your presence for the record, and the members have before them the amendments that you're referring to as 1, 2, and 3, so if you want to go ahead and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. The first amendment is on page 3 and 4, and it refers primarily to the revocation insofar as it affects individuals with mental illness. And what we are proposing is that we add two paragraphs. We make subparagraphs to include the first one, which would be A number 1, and include except in the case of mental illness, and then just go through for what that ordinarily would cover, and then insert a subparagraph 2, which reads, and I will read it. If you don't want me to, stop me. It just reads, in the case of mental illness, a declaration may be revoked in whole or in part at any time by the principal if the principal is neither incapable nor incompetent. We include the incompetent language because that is the legal definition. Continuing with the amendment, a revocation is effective when a capable, competent principal communicates the revocation to the attending physician or other provider. The attending physician or other provider shall note the revocation as part of the principal's medical record. The authority of a named agent and an alternative agent named in the declaration continues in effect as long as the declaration appointing the agent is in effect or until the agent has withdrawn. What I don't have included here is a basic reasoning behind this, and we got this from consumers themselves. They feel that this advance directive is not effective at all because of the possibility of coercion, intimidation, or undue influence when they are incapacitated. Are there any questions on this particular amendment?
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Actually, I do, and it's just technical. Are you amending at pages 3 and 4? I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right CS.
It starts on page 3 and continues on page 4. So the amendment on page 3 is A, and then inserted right there will be...
Are you amending section 1352.020?
Yes.
That's actually page 4.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Ma'am, are you amending subsection A or subsection B?
We're inserting... you're correct. I apologize.
I think it's only on page 4, lines 3 yeah. through 5.
Right. I have 3 in there simply because the section is on page 3.
Yep.
Yeah. So it would be B1 is what we'd be looking at.
So B would become B1, and then we'd have a new B2.
Exactly, yeah.
Representative Samuels has moved amendment number 1. Is there any objection to amendment number 1? Amendment number 1 carries. Edie, you can proceed on to amendment number 2. Amendment number 1 has carried.
Okay. Amendment number 2, page 24, excuse me, 28, line 4. Number 14, guardian means a judicially appointed, and we propose to change that to person, eliminating guardian and conservator. The rationale is clearly stated. The use of guardian, first of all, is circular. And reference to a conservator making health decisions at all is very confusing. That would be the proposal.
Madam Chair. Representative Groomberg.
In AS Title 13, the term guardian is already defined, and I'm not sure if it's in section. Well, this is a new thing, Section 52, but it's already defined in 13.26. Is the definition here is a little bit different than the guardian in 13.26, right?
To eliminate it. She's proposing to eliminate it, Representative Groomberg?
No. She's simply making a small amendment.
Delete guardian or conservator and insert the word person.
No, I understand, but this is what they're dealing with is a new definition of, quote, guardian. See, Section 14 defines the term guardian. And if the committee were to look in 13.26, which is in the Uniform Probate Code, Section 13.26 is the incapacitated persons chapter of the Uniform Probate Code, and guardian has a very specific meaning there, and you're using the same term in a slightly different way in 13.52. Isn't that true? And I'm wondering if it is, will there possibly be any confusion? Because it's a question of whether you're a 13.26 guardian or a 13.52 guardian. Do you understand what I'm saying, ma'am?
Yes, I do, Representative Gruber. And I don't have 1326 in front of me. So
our ever-present staff is going to get it, and I presume get it for the committee here. My recollection, having worked in that area, is the term guardian and the term conservator are defined there, and I thought that may have been the reason they were used in this line in the bill, because they were thinking of people who had already been appointed as guardians or conservative. By the way, for the information of the real people on the committee who aren't the people who practice in this area of the law, a guardian is a person who's a guardian of the person, makes decisions of the person, and a conservator is the person who manages the affairs of the estate.
Madam Chair, may I?
Yes. Please state your name and affiliation.
My name is Bob Briggs. I'm a staff attorney in the Juneau office.
Sorry, and I thought you were in line, Bob.
The first point I want to point out is that the beginning of this whole definition section defines the terms for the use of this particular chapter, so it limits these definitions to these kinds of health care decisions. The second point is that we're trying to address the very concern I think you're addressing, Representative Grinberg, about the possibility of two concepts of guardian arising. By limiting the definition to a person who has been appointed, a judicially appointed person having authority to make a health care decision for an individual, I think we are focused on a judicially appointed person. We could solidify that by a cross-reference to the very definitions you're referring to.
You may,
Representative Grinberg?
To the Chair, you may want to do that. That's a good point, because my understanding is under 13.26, and maybe you know, Representative Bach, you can appoint an institution as a conservator under 13.26, can't you? I'm asking anybody who might know that. I think you can appoint an institution, although in Title I, the term person can include a company, as I recall.
Trustor.
I don't know. I don't practice in this area.
Okay. These are good points. So, Mr. Briggs, you'll research that.
We'll work on a definition that will encompass all of the entities that are capable.
My staff.
Representative Grunberg's staff will
By the way,
volunteer.
This is Andy Josephson from Representative Sisness, who's worked on this thing, is helping me on this, says that OPIS sometimes appointed a guardian or a conservator, the Office of Public Advocacy.
Fair enough. Okay, so that said, we have amendment number 2 before us.
Can we hold that on the table?
And
It
hasn't been moved yet. Representative Wyrock? Representative Wyrock? Would your wishes be to move this amendment and then work out the technical details later, or would it be to table amendment number 2 for now and work on the details and move it in Concord?
It's very request that we adopt these, and Representative Rosen, I work well with him, and Representative Rosen.
Okay. That said, is there a motion for amendment number 2?
So moved.
So moved. Hearing any objection? Hearing none. Amendment number 2 is moved with the caveat that Representative Grunberg will work well, as he always does, apparently, with Representative Wyrock.
I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Briggs. Okay, amendment number 3. Edie, are you still with us? Are you awake?
I am. Actually, I know this is late coming in now, but for that amendment number 2, I would like to make sure that it's not in 1326, that accounts for the whole chapter of that particular statute, just so we're aware. Really gets involved. But that said, let me continue with amendment number 3.
Okay.
Page 29, lines 3 and 4. We want to insert the definition for incompetence. That definition being, and I will be.
Edie, you don't have to read. We've got it right before us.
Okay, thank you. Good. The reason for this being that we're using the term incompetence for the revocation section, and it's different from the general population, and we just want to be able to make that distinction. This was at the suggestion of Dr. Wallington at the FSSF process.
Isn't this the definition?
Okay, please proceed.
Page 29, line 9, we would like to insert the definition for mental health treatment to include, as you can read, I don't need to read that either, just because it clarifies some of the other amendments that have already been made.
Absolutely. Representative Samuels.
I would move amendment 3 and I'd move amendment 3.
Amendment number 3. Any objection? Representative Grunberg.
Yes, staff has pointed out that apparently elsewhere in the bill, thank you, Madam Chair, elsewhere in the bill, they refer to electroshock. Current law refers to electroshock treatment. I don't know if that appears, that term electroshock treatment, appears anywhere in the bill, or is that now
Representative Edie can answer, but just for look on page 28, line 20, section D, there's the same language that's mirrored in the amendment regarding electroconvulsive treatment. So I would assume that it's the same throughout, but why don't we have Edie answer?
Yeah, it's now considered electroconvulsive. It's called ECT. And as far as I know, it's not used in Alaska. We're inserting that particular part to the definition because we anticipate that an advanced directive will be reciprocal in participating states.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
If this bill passes, will the term electroshock therapy appear anywhere in Alaska law, and if so, do we need to conform that to the new bill?
I don't imagine it would, but I would have no objection if we wanted to include that.
Representative Gruenberg, do you still maintain your objection to amendment number 3? Representative Samuels.
I'd like to also add a friendly amendment to my amendment 3 to renumber accordingly.
Okay, friendly amendment to amendment number 3, renumber accordingly. Representative Gruenberg, do you still maintain your objection?
No, but I would ask the staff to maybe have legal check and make sure that we're not having any terms electroshock if that term is being superseded here. And if the staff would do that, and then we can deal with it later if it does. But with that, I'll withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Gruenberg. Okay, so hearing no further objection, amendment number 3 carries with the friendly amendment regarding renumber accordingly. Thank you, Representative Samuels. Amendment number 4 is now before us. Edie?
Amendment number 4, I have to ask if that page 4, line 20 to 29?
That's correct.
Okay, because we didn't get a copy here. I wanted to make sure you have that.
We just received it.
Once more, what we're doing is spelled out in the rationale. We want to define the limits of authority for a surrogate. This is a new concept in the field of mental health, and a lot of individuals with mental illness are very nervous about allowing someone that they don't know or do not know will be making those decisions to be given that authority. So primarily what this does is it carves out an exception showing that a surrogate may not make any healthcare treatment decisions while still enabling them to take advantage of the debt of dignity that's intended by this bill. Once more, we reviewed this with Dr. Wallington, and she's okay with this.
Edie and or Bob, who's sitting here before us, if you could clarify the copy that we just got faxed to us a few minutes ago, has a line through what is subsection B, lines 7 through 13. Is that intentional or an accident of the copier?
Actually, it's indicative of how careful I was when I was going over. You can ignore it now.
Okay, so for the record, section B, including the subsections 1 and 2, is included in amendment number 4.
That's correct.
Okay, any questions for either Mr. Briggs or Representative Ogg.
Clarification, when you do that, then you end up having another section B, so there needs to be some clarification as to exactly what lines are going to be deleted.
Friendly amendment to renumber accordingly? Is that what I hear?
Yes, well, at the top here it says delete lines 20 through 29, and so if you're including B in this language, then you move on to B again. Because
that's 29
correct. Before.
So Representative Ogg has a friendly amendment to renumber accordingly. And actually, I guess it is already there. My staff just pointed out to me on line 14, re-letter and renumber accordingly, subsections beginning on page 4. Representative Gruenberg.
Yeah, that's what I thought it did. Okay. It just substitutes a new A.
There you go. Okay, Representative Samuels.
One thing that Representative Gruenberg just said, inserting another A and another B.
No, this is going to be a new A. Takes out the present A and puts in this new A.
Confident the drafters will figure it out, and they have the authority under line 14 that says re-letter accordingly, subsections beginning on page 4, lines 30 and following. Representative Samuels.
Move amendment 4.
Is there any objection to the movement of amendment number 4? Representative Gruenberg.
Just so I understand, it appears to me that we are not adopting the language on the page that has been offered as amendment number 4. This B is not part of the amendment.
Representative Grunberg, we just completed about 5 minutes of conversation on that, in which Edie responded that that was an error and that it is included.
Oh, it is included.
That's
like
correct.
Oh, but it is included. Oh.
That's correct.
Madam Chair, may I?
Mr. Briggs.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, the intent of the amendment is to provide substitute language that clarifies the subsection A that exists in the current form of version I of this bill, and would substitute section A with a new subsection A and new subsection B, and as already indicated, re-letter subsection B in existing version I as C and re-letter the rest of them. Basically, the current form of the bill creates some confusion because you'll notice, for example, two exceptions. The current form of the bill says, except in the case of mental health treatment. And then if you go down to subparagraph 1, it says the primary physician, except in the case of mental illness, which creates a little confusion.
Yeah.
So the purpose of the proposed amendment is to clarify when a surrogate can act when the issue relates to mental health treatment.
Thank you, Mr. Briggs. Representative Grunberg, do you maintain your objection to amendment number 4?
No, that was as a result of confusion.
Okay. The amendment, that's okay. We all have those days. Amendment number 4, hearing any further objection? Hearing none, amendment number 4 carries as well. I have a bunch of other people on the line to testify. Edie, do you have anything further you'd like to add for the record?
Nope.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for all your hard work and working with the Judiciary Committee on some good amendments that make this a better bill. With that, Jens, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Are you holding on? How are you?
Very good, thank you.
You obviously, I know who you are, but if you want to state your name and affiliation for the record, and then please proceed.
Jens Sock-Whitney, I'm director of Life Alaska, which is tissue and organ donor program serving the state. I'd like to voice support for HB 25 and make myself available for any questions or concerns that the House bill may generate.
Thank you very much, Jens. I appreciate all your hard work with Life Alaska, and I appreciate you being here today. And stand by if you'd like. It's going to be interesting. There's another 35 minutes. Next, we have Dick Block with the Christian Science Church. Mr. Block, are you online? Okay, he's no longer online. Okay, with that, I will go to people who are online. I'll just continue with them and then go to the people who are here in the room. Next, I have in Anchorage, Ron Cohen, who is the LTC Ombudsman. Are you there, Mr. Cohen?
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Ron Cowan, and I'm the long-term care ombudsman for the state. My comments will be brief. I've been able to work with Edie and others, especially Linda out of Representative Wyworth's office, and I, too, support the bill with the amendments that were addressed earlier today. I, too, will remain available if there are any questions. For those who are not familiar with my office, we are the federally mandated and state-designated advocacy office for persons 60 and over who reside in long-term care facilities within our state.
Thank you.
Basically, I'm here to be available for questions and to add my support to the bill with the amendments that were incorporated today.
Thank you, Mr. Cowan, and we appreciate you standing by in case there are any other questions. Next, I have Marguerite Stetson in the Anchorage LIO with AARP. Are you there, Ms. Stetson?
Yes, I'm here. This is Marguerite Stetson, and I do volunteer with AARP. I'm also in support of HB 25. The advanced directives, their five wishes, or whatever you call these end-of-life decisions, are important. A discussion about a person's wishes should take place within a family. a number of years ago, AERP had a program to encourage people to have an advanced directive. At that time, my husband and I talked about our feelings and wrote on paper the advanced directive format, what we wanted to happen. Most hospitals now ask whether you have an advanced directive. My husband passed away suddenly last year while we were vacationing in Arizona, and the first thing the doctor in the emergency room asked me was, did my husband have an advanced directive? And he did. And it was important that I knew he did not want to be placed on life support when the medical outcome indicated there was no hope. I also knew that he wanted to be cremated. These difficult decisions had to be made within 24 hours in the state where we did not live. I now urge anyone that I talk to that an advanced directive or five wishes should be discussed in a form completed by everyone. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Marguerite, for sharing your personal testimony and for waiting online to testify today. And see, any questions for you, Marguerite? Moving down the list, I am now going to go to the Fairbanks LAO. I have Charlotte Davis. Charlotte, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You could just...
My name is Charlotte Davis, and I'm a public health nurse for the elders. I am here as a private citizen. And first, I'd like to compliment everyone for working so hard on this bill. I know it's taken us quite a long time. We've been following through on it here in Fairbanks. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but the in November of last year, there was a study by lastx.org that graded the state of Alaska as an E on our advanced directive policies. Not because we didn't have a living will, durable power of attorney, or a comfort one program, or do not resuscitate program, but because we didn't have a single comprehensive advanced directive. And so that people could express things in their own way. And we do have quite a few forms, and there's many versions of those forms out there. And so this is an important bill, and I do support this bill. I'm here today to speak as a person who teaches classes to those who are interested in doing advanced directives and actually helping elders from different cultures complete their advanced directives. And I'd like to point out some things that I think that are confusing to people and areas in which this bill will clear it up. But I also have several questions or comments on it. If you could follow along in the bill, would it be okay if I made those suggestions?
Absolutely, Ms. Davis. We have the bill before us. Please proceed.
First of all, when we came out with a living will, that still creates quite a bit of confusion between living will and regular will. And so I really like the Advanced Directive for Healthcare title. That's very important. The confusion still exists between a power of attorney, a durable power of attorney for health care, and a power of attorney. And I see some complications in this bill where those aren't spelled out real clearly. On page 2, line 13, is the section B. You have an adult or emancipated minor may execute, and you have a power of attorney for health care. If you go back in the instruction, in the definition of an advanced health directive, and that is on page 26, it says an advanced health care directive means an individual instruction or a power of attorney for health care. I'd like to propose to change section B so it reads, an adult or emancipated minor may execute an individual instruction or durable power of attorney for healthcare decisions, to make that as clear as possible to everyone and kind of get away from the language of power of attorney and power of attorney for healthcare.
Okay.
If you go down to, and that's the main thing with the language between the two. If you go down to line 30 on page 2, I understand from the reading this bill that witnesses may be related to persons by blood or marriage or adoption. At least one of the witnesses may be. And if you go back to the sample form that you have, witness form, and the witness form is on page 25. The witness says, I am not related to the principal by blood, marriage, or adoption, or, to the best of my knowledge, not entitled to a part of the state. So you've got some conflict here between Section E and the example witness form that you have on page 25. I have quite a few concerns. I have elders that come in that want to do these forms, and I have forms that are done in the villages, forms that are done by people who don't understand what they're doing. They don't seek assistance, and I am sometimes reluctant to take seriously the advance directive that an elder has done when it's been signed by family members and I as the only witnesses.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Davis. We have the bill sponsor, Representative Bruce Wyrock, here, who's indicated to me just now that he would appreciate having a phone conversation with you regarding the issues that you've brought up. And he'll be calling you, or Bruce, is that right, correct? Or can we get your telephone number, Charlotte?
Yes, probably my home number is the best.
Okay.
907-488-6187.
Okay. And I think for privacy reasons, we'll exclude that from the record. But we'll give this to Representative Wyrock. Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Davis. We appreciate it. And we'll take those concerns into account as we move through.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now I'm going to go. I'm done with everybody online. Is there anybody online that I missed? Okay. Representative Anderson.
I have two questions. I'll make them brief. I know we want to finish this and also get to Representative Myers. Online. Is Mr. Malley there? Paul, are you still there? Aging with Dignity. Okay, if not, then I'll then ask Mr. Sequitney? Jens, are you still there? They all tune off. I'll ask the sponsor when we're done with testimony. Thanks.
Sorry about that, Representative Anderson. Did I overlook?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jens. I'm still here if you need me.
Okay, super quick question. This is Representative Anderson through the chair. On page 2 of the CS we've adopted, this actually Representative Wyrock hasn't even changed this, but I just said a question. Page 2, top of the page, line 3. Actually, I'll have to go back farther. It says, Department of Hess, upon notification, shall request a court order authorizing the body to be plainly and decently buried or cremated. This is if it's an unclaimed body. And I just wondered if an amendment were made, and we don't have to waste time on this for this bill, but I just thought how expensive it is to bury unclaimed bodies versus cremating. But my guess is you would object because an unclaimed body that's healthy in I don't know if that's an oxymoron, but I'm glad we're not on camera. but I would think it would be much cheaper to cremate, but I would think that you would have an objection because you might want the organs or tissue. Is that correct?
No, I would have no objections on that. We have such a short time constraint that by the time a decision is made to cremate or bury, donation will have either happened or will way past the window of opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
That's it. Thank you, Jens. Without further ado...
No, you're wanting to buy them.
That's right. Okay, next I have in attendance today, thank you all for waiting, Richard Rainery from the Mental Health Board. Richard, thank you for being so patient.
Same one in the bunch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Richard Rainery. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board, which is the board appointed by the governor and charged with service delivery planning and advocacy for Alaskans with mental illness. Briefly, I wanted to testify in support of HB 25, particularly with the amendments that have been provided today. These basically continue protections currently in law for individuals with mental illness, and we have absolutely no objection to the bill as it's stated.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Rainery? Hearing no questions, thank you very much. Next, I have Shelley Owens, pardon me, with Comfort One Program for the state of Alaska. Thank you for being so patient, Ms. Owens.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Shelley Owens. I'm a health program manager with Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Public Health, Section of Community Health and Emergency Medical Services. And we support the bill. The department supports the bill, and we've been tracking it for 2 years. One thing that wasn't said in terms of the history that might be useful is that the sort of heart of the program was the Five Wishes program, which is embodied in this expanded Living Will, expands our Living Will directive. But also the bill, the structure in which the consolidation of the other provisions of law was the Uniform Healthcare Directives Act, which was endorsed by the American Bar Association 10 years ago. And that's sort of the structure of how the bill has come to be. We have been tracking and ensuring that the Comfort One provisions are incorporated. And I know the Anatomical Gifts Act and, you know, other, there's been some fine-tuning to make sure that the Model Act, the Uniform Act, is fine-tuned to ensure that the Alaska provisions are contained in it. Just briefly, our focus has been the ensuring that the provisions of the Comfort One program do not resuscitate program or carried forward. The law was enacted in 1996 and is working well. It's a system for identifying terminally ill a person who has a do not resuscitate order so that their wishes can be honored outside of the hospital. Our goals are to honor the wishes of a terminally ill patient, not to be resuscitated when his or her heart and breathing stops, and to help develop a system where the patient's wishes can be clearly and unambiguously communicated to healthcare providers. So we just would encourage you to keep the unique environment of pre-hospital emergency medical services in mind as you review the bill. Thank you for your time. I'm available to work with the sponsor and to answer questions in whatever way I can.
Thank you, Ms. Owens. Representative Groomberg.
Thank you. Ms. Owens, do you have a copy of the bill in front of you? The SCS?
Yes.
Okay, I'd like you to look at page 17 and line 12. The term there, quote, do not resuscitate orders, unquote.
Sorry, page 7, line
12.
Page 17. Oh. Sorry. Today.
Yeah. Page 17, line 12.
Okay.
The term, quote, do not resuscitate orders that appears there. Do you see where I'm referring to, ma'am?
Mm-hmm.
You interpret that phrase to mean an order coming from a person or a court order?
Representative Groomberg, through the chair. Do not resuscitate order is by definition an order from a physician. It may be defined in the, I don't mean necessarily by, we should possibly look at the definitions to see exactly how that's defined, but my understanding of a DNR is the medical directive from a physician.
Representative Groenberg, page 27.
Okay,
for the record, the definition is on page 27, line 27, subsection 11. Do not resuscitate order means a directive from a licensed physician that emergency cardiopulmonary resuscitation should not be administered to a qualified patient. So it is defined.
I see. I see where you're talking about. So, Madam Chair, through the Chair.
Representative Groomberg.
So this language here, if you take it from page 17, line 4, would give the agent the right to overrule a physician's do not resuscitate order if that authority were not limited by the person, correct?
Okay. Representative Greenberg, through the chair. This is in the form.
Right.
And so I would assume that statute would prevail if there's a conflict with the form. My understanding of this, and I can work with the sponsor to make it, you know, a little more clear, is that the word disapprove, I would assume, would mean a DNR that comes into effect after the individual has lost the capacity to express their preferences.
Right.
So if you've got someone who's gone comatose, who doesn't have the ability to indicate, then their agent may, if the physician presents them with the, you know, with this question, do you want a do not resuscitate order entered or not, then my understanding is that the agent surrogate would be able to speak on behalf of the person.
Well, I read it a little stronger than that, that the word disapprove means that unless the authority of the agent were limited by the patient, the agent could override the physician's DNR order, correct?
And what you're saying then is if an order has been, I'm sorry, through the chair, if a DNR is already in effect.
Right.
Okay, what we're talking about then is revocation, and revocation in the bill specifically is limited to a situation where the patient has expressed the desire to have it revoked. So that's why I'm saying
I'd like you to look at the language here carefully.
And I understand that the disapprove, it sounds like we're sort of have the same concern that disapprove not be construed to mean revoke.
Well, I think it's
existing DNR.
It looks to me like the way this is written,
mm-hmm.
that the term disapprove allows the agent under these circumstances, if the authority is not limited, to override the physician's DNR order, right?
By override, do you mean if the physician is...
Supersede.
Has the physician entered a DNR, has the physician signed a DNR under your scenario?
Yes.
Okay. Then if your interpretation then is that disapprove is the same as revoke, then it's in conflict with the explicit revocation provision in the bill. So it may be that we want to cross-reference it to the revocation section.
Wait a second. I'm just...
Representative Groenberg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The staff has pointed out what I think may be the way this thing is written, and maybe I should not be asking you, but asking somebody else, is the interpretation that I'm giving correct, that under this form, the patient, unless the authority of the agent were limited, the agent would have the authority to override a physician's DNR order. That's the way I'm reading it. And I just am wondering, do you feel qualified to say whether that is a correct reading or not?
Well, I don't know whether I'm qualified to give an interpretation one way or the other. I just, my construction of disapprove does not mean revoke. And Section 1352.060 on page 8F at the bottom specifically lays out the fact that that even a physician may not revoke a DNR unless it's at the request of the patient.
How do you read the term disapprove?
Well, disapprove may not be the best. As I say, my understanding is that once the patient is no longer able to express their wishes, that the surrogate or agent would be able to speak on the patient's behalf. If you have a patient who has never had the opportunity to say that they would like a DNR under these circumstances, then their surrogate agent or a guardian has the authority to speak, to say, yes, I would like to give consent for a DNR on behalf of my...
One other thing I think, Representative Groenberg, that's important to note, too, is on line, page 17, lines 4 through 5, there is a place in there where a person is choosing, if you choose not to limit the authority of your agent will have the right to. So there is a place in sitting down with your family where you can say, I do choose to limit the authority of my agent.
I understand that, Madam Chair. I just did not know, and I'm still somewhat unclear. Maybe Representative Wyrock can clarify this. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. But what we mean by the term, quote, approve or disapprove. I'm not sure still whether that allows the agent, if their authority is not limited, to override the physician. And obviously this dialogue shows that we're both confused, so I think that we need to have that clarified. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg, and thank you, Ms. Owens. Any further questions of Ms. Owens? Okay, and I will keep moving down the list here. Next, I have Sue Douglas from Hospice. Sue spelled the good way.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sue Plummer Douglas. I'm here today representing myself and my family, but as well the Juno Hospice Foundation. I'm also representing the Juno End of Life Task Force, a group that gathered almost 3 years ago now that really instigated asking Representative Bill Hudson to originally introduce this legislation, which he did, and as you know, it passed the House. But now it's reintroduced. Thank you very much to Representative Wyrock. And it's a much better bill, and I compliment everybody who has worked so hard since it's been reintroduced. It's a much more daunting and comprehensive bill. The original idea was to make sure that the philosophy of the five wishes was included in Alaska statute. But now it's so comprehensive and includes other good things that I just want to say that I appreciate very much the extra work everybody has gone to on this and the caring that has gone into making this a much more clear bill, as well as easier for Alaskans to understand by bringing everything in from the various sections of the law under this section. And I think that makes a world of difference, and I think some of your other folks who've offered testimony have indicated that as well. So I'm very strongly support this bill and hope that its passage will occur soon so it can get over to the Senate side. I suspect there's some work there to do as well, so I appreciate everything that you folks have been doing. The main thing I want to say is I think this is really good public policy. I think this is a good way for legislators to help Alaskans help themselves. This is one of those nice things you all can do when you have to pass laws. And it certainly has nothing in there that tells a person how a person must die, but it gives a person and their family choices and clarity on how they wish to be cared for during those last days. I'm personally passionate. I had my husband, my mother, my father, my son, and my mother-in-law all die in the past 4 years. So I know very personally how misunderstanding or lack of directive or confusion or unclear dialogue with a physician can complicate those last days of one's life. So anything you all can do to help that, to help Alaskans, I commend you for and appreciate a lot. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and the hard work that you do for hospice. Next I have Marie Darlin with AARP. Welcome, Ms. Darling. Thank you again for waiting.
My name is Marie Darlin, and I'm representing AARP for Alaska. And you have a letter of support from our state office, which is in your file. But I want to add the fact that we, as AARP, have been very involved with this from the beginning, as Sue Douglas has said, as a result of some of the end-of-life issues. And we do urge you to pass this bill this year. It's had 2 years of intense work and a lot of more good work since then, too, that has happened this session. So it's something that really is needed in this state, as you have had all kinds of testimony and will more, even I'm sure, in support of the fact that it is needed. It does help people then to make their end-of-life decisions and make it possible for families to get all of this taken care of when it should be, and not wait until the last minute when you have all these other things to contend with too. So we just do urge you to support the legislation, and we're pleased to see all of the amendments that are being made, because they all help clarify the issues, which is really what the whole idea behind this is to make some of these decisions easier to make. So therefore, we just urge your support of the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Darlin. Any questions? Thank you for being patient, and thank you for your testimony. And the last person that I have here in the room is Sam Trivett, and then I understand that Ron Cowan, who's on the line, wants to speak again. But first, let's get to Sam Trivett, who's with the who's a retired public employees of Alaska. There you are.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'll make this fairly brief. I know you've had a long session today. Basically, RPEA is an association of retired employees from Alaska, and health care is one of our primary issues. And I'm here speaking on behalf of our association, but also primarily from my personal experience. I was the guardian conservator of my mother for the last few years. She was alive by the last four. My father's power of attorney for the last 5 or 6 years that he was alive. And this dealing with some of their issues was extremely difficult without having a place where you could go to find all the answers to these questions. And luckily, we had good physicians working with us that helped us make the decisions we had to. And I can assure you, the last couple of months of their lives, if we had not had physicians who knew this area pretty well, I think our family, my brother and sister and I, would have had a very difficult time trying to deal with those issues at the time. My aunt had some difficulties in another state where these issues were not dealt with ahead of time, and it was hell for the family down there. I've got two other real good friends, one who's a certified financial planner who deals with family issues like this all the time, and another friend who does a lot of work with families in the state still on a regular basis, although he's not paid to do it. And both of them, I've talked to them about with them about this bill, and they both are very supportive of the concept. As all of you know, when you get to be older, even though my parents were professionally trained and were pretty sharp mentally with the health issues they had, frankly, dealing with legal issues got to be extremely difficult the last few years. And again, my friends who deal with this on a regular basis say that, you know, having all the statutes in place, having them in clear language that is easy for all to understand is a key issue. And I really very much appreciate Representative Wyrock taking the bull by the horns this year on this bill and pushing it. And we strongly support the bill and hope that you will pass it. Thanks very much.
Questions for Mr. Trivett? Representative Groenberg.
Just glad to see you again. This man has appeared before this committee on behalf of the parole board and other things many, many times, and I'm just glad to see you.
33 years.
33 years. Thank you very much. We appreciate your service to the state of Alaska. And finally, I have Mr. Ron Cowan, who'd like to speak again. Are you there, Ron?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Please go ahead.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I'm not certain if it was Representative Groenberg or one of the other members of the committee who had some questions or concerns regarding the agent's ability to disapprove a do not resuscitate order. And I guess I wanted to speak to that. I certainly am not an attorney, but it would be my understanding and interpretation as well that absent of limitations placed upon the agent by the principal, that the agent would indeed have the authority to disapprove such things as a do not resuscitate order. I'm encouraged by the language that is found on page 3, starting with line 18, that stipulates that the agent is to make healthcare decisions in accordance with principal instructions, and that absent of those instructions, in the principal's best interest based upon their knowledge of the principal. The reason that I think this is important, and if I'm interpreting it correctly, is because in my experience working with the elderly and having worked in the field of healthcare for 18 plus years, there have been a number of times when physicians have taken it upon themselves to place do not resuscitate orders without anybody's input, because they believed, and I believe in good conscience, that the person's health situation was such that that they may well not have a very good quality of life were they to survive. And while I think each of us have come to our own decisions about what we would like done for ourselves, I think that it's important that the law protect an individual to be able to make that decision for themselves regardless of whether we think it's appropriate or not. So I actually like the protection that is afforded that the resuscitate order when that order is placed without the authority of the principal.
Thank you for that input, Mr. Cowan. Okay. Representative Wyrock, we have about 5 minutes more. If you'd like to come back up and respond to any of the testimony that's been brought up or questions. And it's my intent, Mr. Wyrock, to, Representative Wyrock, to go ahead and hold us over for members to think about it just a little bit over the weekend. And I'd like to bring it back up again Monday if people are ready, but I'll work, my staff will work with yours to make sure that you are. And we just appreciate all your time today and the time of all the witnesses.
Well, I want to get together with Ms. Davis from Representative Holmes District and then talk with Representative Grunberg about this and think about what Mr. Cowan just said and then get back with the committee on Monday.
I just have one question.
Representative Anderson.
And you can dismiss any other questions I would have because I won't have any more than this.
I'm tired.
Wow.
Play that tape back. No, on page 3K, subsection K, it states an advanced health care directive is valid for purposes of this chapter if it complies with this chapter or, and this is what I'm interested in, if it was executed in compliance with the laws of the state where it was executed. Does this mean that we're bound, sure seems like it, by other state advanced directives?
I think that was sort of relates to the testimony from Marguerite Stinson, who was in Florida when her husband passed away, and that she had something in place that that applied in Florida and therefore sort of be fungible in those states. Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Anderson, that you'd like Representative Wyrock to disregard?
Thank you. All my wishes have been granted. Thank
all
you.
Wishes granted. Okay.
All five
Any
of them.
Further questions from the committee at this time? Okay, thank you very much, and thank you to all the witnesses online and in the audience for your testimony and your patience. Judiciary is adjourned.